folks, with 1 week left in 2013, we're $6,000 short of budget. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift this week. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., send it to Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible contribution online at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of 2013. I think you can really top this story. This last year may have not had a lot of religion stories. That's kind of the way I'm looking at the list that the Religion News Association, News Writers Association, put out of top 10 religion stories. It gets a little thin towards the bottom of the list, but the top story is a huge story. It is a story of a decade, really, and that is a new pope is elected. Now, how the press covers that new pope is a story in itself. Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this New Year's Eve. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly joins us here for the first half hour or so of this hour to talk about the top religion stories of 2013. And we'll also ask him near the end of the conversation about what he thinks the top story of 2014 might be. He's a pretty good prognosticator in that respect. A little bit later, we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson today. Luke chapter 2, beginning at verse 41, the boy Jesus in the temple. Pastor Tom Baker will be our guest. Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
Are there any glaring omissions from the top 10 religion stories this year?
Well, if we're talking about the Religion News Writers Association, the RNA list, which is what most people post in their local newspapers, it's not so much that there's anything missing from the list. It's that a lot of stuff had been combined in ways that I think kind of hide some of the crucial elements of what happened in the year. Obviously, the first thing on anybody's list is going to have to do with Pope Francis. Although, if you look at it from a historical perspective, the first resignation of a pope in 600 years is a bigger story than just a pope being elected. I mean, if you want to look at it from a historical perspective. So the resignation of Benedict and the election of Francis, to me, really are, you know, a part of the same change. The whole change in Francis in terms of the tone of the papacy and primarily the tone of how he's being covered by the press, I think it's hard to expect journalists to not think that's the number one story of the year since they have devoted so much ink and headline space to it. To me, what I think is interesting is that if you actually pay attention to what Francis is saying, I think Francis would say that the number one story of the year is the rising level of persecution of the church in Egypt, Syria, and throughout the whole Ring of Fire, throughout that region. And in the RNA, I'm sure, the Religion News Writers Association list, that kind of gets divided up. I mean, you've got Syria really downplayed. You have Egypt, the overthrowing of the government of the Islamist government of Egypt, clearly is one of the big stories of the year, and I think it deserves its own, you know, attention. And it's probably in the top five, right there. At the same time, though, if you were going to combine any trend, to me, you would combine the persecution in Pakistan, Syria, Egypt, you know, Africa. I mean, in different parts of Africa, you would put all of that into one item, and for me, it would go really high in the list. I don't know if I would have put it number one, but I suspect Pope Francis would have put it number one.
Turning to the subject of Pope Francis, give us your journalist's perspective on why the press is, well, they really, really like him a lot, but they don't seem to get him, really.
Well, this man speaks off the cuff in many, many cases, and it has been a long time since there was a pope who just kind of stood and answered questions in casual language. I've talked to a lot of Catholics about this, and I recently had an opportunity because of a conference on religion in the news in Latin America. I had a chance to spend a couple of days in Buenos Aires, where I talked to several people who had known Pope Francis during his time as cardinal there in Buenos Aires, had known him for a decade or two, and they're all convinced that to some degree the press is missing the main point. I mean, he hasn't changed anything in terms of the substance of the teaching of the Church. Everybody gets that, yet they still keep quoting over and over his statement, in particular because homosexuality is so crucial to the mainstream press in America. They keep quoting his statement that, who am I to judge? And, of course, what he's saying is that ultimately only God can judge. But then he affirms the teachings of the Church. The press is also missing his constant references to repentance and confession, which means this doesn't sound like a man who is going soft on sin. Instead, and this is a radical change and deserved headlines, he is saying that the Catholic Church must be known first and foremost for its pastoral care on issues related to abortion, poverty, the elderly, etc. The Church should be known for its actions in pastoral care more than what it says in terms of public square policy debates. But notice over and over the Pope uses the same word. He seems that what is needed is a new sense of balance. Now, if you know anything about the word balance, you know that balance doesn't mean that one side goes away. In fact, my favorite thing from the entire year was that while the Pope was being quoted as saying that the Catholic Church has become too obsessed with abortion, at the same time that story was breaking and those important quotes were being discussed, everybody missed the fact that he was speaking at a global conference on abortion. And they missed the actual contents of the man's thought on this issue, and they missed the essence of the pastoral care he wants to see the Church offer, which for me was beautifully symbolized by a story that got more attention in Europe than here, which was when a woman wrote him, a single woman who was having an affair with a married man, and when she got pregnant, the married man ordered her to have an abortion and cut off his relationship with her. And the woman, just in agony and distress, wrote a letter to the Pope and certainly didn't expect a couple of days later for her phone to ring, and it's Pope Francis on the telephone saying, "You have made the right choice to save this child. Bring the child to the Vatican. I will baptize this child, and I will serve as your spiritual father as you recover from this wrong that has been done to you."
I didn't read anything about this.
Well, I wrote a column about it, and all of that case unfolded right at the time that everybody was talking about him saying that we were too obsessed with abortion. And they missed his speech at a conference on abortion and other social issues, in which he primarily blamed abortion on, and I think this is proper, he blamed it on the commercialization and materialism of our culture, that in worship of money and jobs and success, we don't want to let unwanted children get in the way. And thus his very important statement in his letter at the end of the year, the one everybody focused on, the trickle-down economics quote, which I am told was not in the Spanish, it was added in the translation. His views on economics are way more liberal than many people in America, but they're totally consistent with the last two or three popes, or four popes. But in that same statement, in what I read as a shot at some elements of the Catholic Church in its debate today, he said, "It is not progressive," his word, "it is not progressive to try to solve problems by making lives end." And that's pretty clear.
When we come back with Terry Mattingly on this New Year's Eve, we're going to move down the list of the RNA top stories of religion in 2013. We'll get to number three, the U.S. Supreme Court voting 5-4 to clear the way for gay marriage in California. Does it deserve to be that high on the list? Terry's answer to that question right after this.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When was Jesus born? When did he die and rise from the grave? And what does the timing of these events have to do with Christian theology and practice for the last 2,000 years? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December is titled, When Was Jesus Really Born? It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can check out When Was Jesus Really Born at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, When Was Jesus Really Born?
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's New Year's Eve. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're going through the top religion stories of 2013. We are 1 week into the Christmas season, but you can still listen to sacred music for the Christmas season until the beginning of Epiphany. We observe the church year at LutheranPublicRadio.org, and that means sacred music for the Christmas season, for the entire Christmas season that follows upon New Year's Eve all the way to Epiphany, there early in January. And then, what will you find at LutheranPublicRadio.org? Sacred music for the world? Epiphany music. Because we follow the course of the church here. You can listen absolutely free anytime. If you're on vacation right now, turn this on, leave it on in your house. It is tremendous music for the Christmas season. LutheranPublicRadio.org, sacred music for the world. Terry, number three on the list, the U.S. Supreme Court votes 5-4 to clear the way for gay marriage in California and voids the ban on federal benefits for same-sex couples. And it goes on to say, gay marriage continues to make inroads within the states, in Illinois and Hawaii, becoming the 15th and 16th states to approve same-sex marriage. Does the Supreme Court's decision about California deserve to be number three on the list?
Yeah, I would have trouble putting it lower than three or four. It's kind of interesting, however, that there are a lot of people, of course, who assume that this issue actually isn't religious at all. Yet in the context of the United States, it's impossible to discuss this story without religion being involved. And I think I can name a family in Louisiana that would agree with that right now. To me, it would be three or four at the lowest.
And then the Affordable Care Act and its implications on at least religious types perceive an implication for religious freedom.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts there?
Well, the wording is interesting. The way it got worded in the poll was the Obama administration makes concessions to faith-based groups and businesses opposed to the Affordable Care Act's contraception mandate, but not enough to satisfy many of them. What's really interesting, there have been tweaks. I wrote about this today at Get Religion, and I had to correct myself on one point. This definition of who is and who isn't a religious employer, it has been tweaked, but the essential element of the debate has not changed, and that is that there's a three-tier system of religious liberty being put in place that breaks down to a fact that the current White House and Justice Department team believes that there is freedom of worship, that things you do inside a church are granted religious liberty, but what you do outside of the church that relates to the public is questionable. And, of course, for-profit groups owned by religious objectors are not granted freedom on this issue at all. So we're very clear at one end, churches are okay. The other end, businesses for profit are not okay. In the middle is where the argument is really flying, because it affects colleges, it affects religious nonprofits. And the case I'm following is the battle, is going to be the lawsuit involving a Catholic ministry here in Baltimore and elsewhere, which is the Little Sisters of the Poor. And the Little Sisters of the Poor, of course, it's a nonprofit charity and religious order that relates to anybody who's elderly and poor. That's who they want to serve. Well, because they don't limit their ministry to Christians or Catholics, and they're not explicitly a church, this is exactly the kind of nonprofit that is upset with this HHS mandate the most, because they're having to provide things to their employees that they view, quite frankly, under Catholic theology, as mortal sins. And this is going to get all the way to the court. Hobby Lobby is one case. The for-profit Hobby Lobby company suit is important. We could get a ruling from the Supreme Court that clarifies all of this there. But don't be surprised if there's another case that makes it to the court, specifically on the issue of religious nonprofit ministries, schools, and parachurch groups. So the wording in the RNA is kind of strange. I would have worded it that the battle over whether the U.S. Constitution contains freedom of worship or religious liberty, the free exercise of religion, that battle definitely continues and goes to the court.
You mentioned number five before, the role, at least as it's listed in the RNA list, the role that Islam plays in the post-Arab Spring Middle East. How would you break that down?
Well, I mean, like I said, I would make that two stories. To me, what happened with the overthrow of the government in Egypt is important. What's happening with the warfare in Syria is important. I see those events in different countries as different from one another. The overarching theme, if you were going to combine it for anything, would be the attacks on the freedom and even the lives of religious minorities, specifically Christians, in a number of nations in the world. If I was going to group anything together, I would have grouped it as saying that there are radical forms of Islam that are currently killing religious minorities, including some small forms of Islam, some Muslim groups as well, but that religious minorities are being radically persecuted in a number of different countries around the world.
That ties into the number seven spot too, doesn't it?
Yeah, let me look at that. Yeah, and like I said, they've got several of them all grouped together, and that one's not worded poorly, in my opinion, but I must confess this is part of my own bias because I'm a part of a church that is based in Syria. But it seems to me that what's happening in Syria is particularly important, what's happening in Syria and what's happening in Egypt, in the sense that we're watching the crushing, quite frankly, of two of the largest and most historic religious minorities in the Middle East. The attitude of Americans toward this is fascinating. I'm watching to see what's going to happen when Coptic believers in Egypt start applying to get out. When they start trying to flee Egypt, if things continue to get worse, are they going to be denied conscientious objector status, or that's not the words I'm looking for. Are they going to be denied kind of persecuted religious status if they try to flee to America? That's an interesting story to watch as well. And Syria, oh my gosh. I mean, we now at the church, the parish I attend, every service begins with prayers for the kidnapped nuns from the village of Malula, and then also two Orthodox bishops that were kidnapped in Aleppo who are still missing now after about 6 months. And there are thousands of people missing and dying and being dislocated, and that includes Muslims, of course. I mean, there are no good guys in the fighting in Syria. It's just a firestorm of competing groups in a civil war, but there's no question who's getting caught in the middle of it the most, and that's the small, defenseless religious minorities, and often that's Christians.
Two quick final questions. Does the death of Nelson Mandela, a very recent story, does it belong on the RNA list as a religion story? About a minute.
You know what? It does belong on that list if you cover that aspect of his life. What I thought was fascinating is he was raised to kind of secular saint status in most of the mainstream media coverage, and very few people actually looked at the religious themes in his life, looked at the origins of the key moment in his entire career, which is when he decides not to seek revenge on the apartheid for, you know, people in South Africa. And you could make a case that he made that decision for reasons that were both pragmatic and highly idealistic and rooted in his readings related to religion, whether Gandhi, his Methodist past, or whatever religious beliefs he had. I didn't see much explicit coverage of that, and I would have liked to have seen it. But yes, I do think his death belongs in this list.
What do you think for 2014 we will be looking at a year from now in terms of a top religion story? What are your thoughts there with about a minute or so?
Well, everything goes to the court. I see this as being an astonishingly important year at the U.S. Supreme Court. We could get the HHS thing settled with the Hobby Lobby case, and then I really think the issue of gay marriage and how that relates to religious liberty and conscientious objections of religious believers in America, that's going to the court sooner or later. The only question is whether it's sooner. But once again, it seems like I have to say this to you every year. I keep looking at the U.S. Supreme Court as the force that really drives America, like it or not.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He is founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest, and we're looking forward to working with you and Get Religion, all your colleagues there as well, in 2014.
Glad to be here again.
Folks, if you've appreciated our weekly interviews throughout 2013 on media coverage of religion with Terry Mattingly, Molly Hemingway, George Conger, Bobby and Tammy Ross, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible donation to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Remember, no gift is too small. You can contribute online at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. Send it to Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. The address again, Issues Etc., Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Today is the final day for you to make a year-end tax-deductible donation, and thanks for your support. When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker will be with us on this New Year's Eve. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson in Luke chapter 2. The boy Jesus is in the temple. His parents leave him behind, and when they find him, he says, "Shouldn't you have known that I'd be about my Father's business?" What is that business? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc., our conversation with Pastor Tom Baker right after this. Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
In the fullness of time, he came, bringing such joy to the world. As the church celebrates the joy of waiting fulfilled, consider registering at acelc.net for our next conference, Christ for Us in the Office of the Holy Ministry, February 25th through 27th in Cedar Falls, Iowa. In the fullness of time, he came and still comes for our joy in his word and sacraments. Have a blessed Christ Mass and visit us at acelc.net.
This is Pastor Jeff Siegel of St. Mary Evangelical Lutheran Church in Des Moines, Iowa, where God gathers us around his means of grace to offer us forgiveness, life, and salvation. Whether you are looking for a church or just visiting Des Moines, if you like Issues Etc., St. Mary's is the church for you. Join us as we gather together every Sunday to continue the Reformation tradition of Christ-centered, cross-focused worship, preaching, and teaching. For more information, go to www.stmarylutheran.org. Remember to spell out Saint.
He Has Made Him Known, a Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
The true God is not a God that will be found as a result of our God-seeking. He will only be revealed as he looks for and finds us. This is what was happening when Jesus was born.
And for any size year-end donation, we'll send you a CD of this sermon and a sermon preached by Todd on the conversion of Paul. You can make an online tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We now have 7 Spanish language transcripts of Issues Etc. that you can download for free.
Ahora tenemos 7 transcripciones en español de Issues Etc. que se puede descargar gratis.
These broadcast transcripts cover the 6 chief parts of Luther's Small Catechism and include a teaching on why do bad things happen.
Estas transcripciones cubren las 6 partes principales del Catecismo Pequeño de Lutero e incluyen una enseñanza que se llama ¿Por qué pasan las malas cosas?
Guests include Matt Harrison, Peter Bender, and Carl Fickenscher.
Los invitados incluyen Matt Harrison, Peter Bender, y Carl Fickenscher.
You can download and print these Spanish transcripts for free. Just go to issuesetc.org and click Publications.
Se puede descargar e imprimir estas transcripciones en español gratis. Solo vaya a issuesetc.org y haz clic en publicaciones.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, coordinator for stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship. lcms.org/stewardship.
Hey, St. Louis. How would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.